1980s, Carl Sagan made that observation that, you know, this is a pale blue dot, this is it, this is where we live. He didn't say pale green dot or pale brown dot, he said pale blue dot. Hi, my name's Craig Donlan, I'm the principal scientist for Oceans and Ice at the European Space Agency, and I'm based over in Noordwijk in the Netherlands.
Hey Space Watchers, it's Chiara Monta here, event coordinator in our Space Watch Global team. End of May this year, I had the pleasure to attend the Living Planet Symposium in Bonn, Germany, the largest Earth observation conference in the world. I was lucky enough to talk to Craig Donlan. We met in the main exhibition hall and sat down to talk about what Earth observation means for oceans, why they are so important, and how Earth observation will develop in the future. This is Space Cafe Radio, your channel about trends, cool people, and real conferences. Enjoy! Let's talk about oceans. Why are they so important? Why are they so interesting to look at in terms of sustaining life?
Well, it's a great question. And why do we all go on holiday by the sea? Well, not everybody, but lots of people like to go there. It's a calming effect. And there's a deep connection, I think, to the oceans, which is linked to perhaps where we came from in the first place, but also the sustaining and calming characteristics of the ocean on planet Earth. The ocean produces our oxygen through the phytoplankton and primary phytoplankton reproduction and primary production. It's absorbing CO2, and part of that photosynthetic process is being using the CO2. So that little story of life there shows you instantly that there's a lot going on in the ocean. At the same time, the ocean is absorbing a lot of the excess heat that we get due to greenhouse gases warming our planet, and it's storing that heat. So it's acting as a buffer at the moment. And it's preventing rapid climate change, if you like. So it's a governor. It's moderating our climate for us. When we live in Europe, the Gulf Stream brings that nice warm water over to our latitudes that without it wouldn't be so warm. And so you have to think about how the ocean, which covers 71% of our planet, depending if you include the ice bits or not, the whole ocean itself is moderating Earth's entire climate. So it's huge, it's really, really important, and it's got a deep connection to us, our climate and our lives.
Very true. I mean, we always call Earth the blue planet as well, so that goes to show how ingrained it is.
There's a good point there. I mean, you know, when Voyager was sent out to go search beyond the heliosphere in the 90s, Carl Sagan made that observation that, you know, this is a pale blue dot, this is it, this is where we live. He didn't say pale green dot or pale brown dot. He said pale blue dot. And that's the unique feature today that we know of. Our planet is all this beautiful seawater, which is keeping Earth alive. It's giving stability, and it's a living, breathing ocean. So that pale blue dot is still important.
Absolutely. I don't know how it is for you, but I've often heard this comparison between oceans and space, that they are very similar domains, and that you even have a lot of people who come from marine biology who then end up working in space as well because they see that connection.
Yeah, well, I mean, aliens. If you want aliens, then go to the bottom of the ocean. When seawater freezes, it produces freshwater ice. And the salt that's in the ocean after that freezing makes a very dense brine fluid. And that brine fluid sinks to the bottom of the ocean. But as it sinks, it also takes oxygen with it. And it effectively ventilates the very deep part of the ocean. If you go down to Antarctica and you're a biologist and you sample the bottom of the sea, there's more or less a 50% chance that you will discover a new species. And down there, they've got some species that are over 10,000 years old, and they're still living, some of the sponges there. And you've got to remember that those creatures are living there at sort of 1,000 meters depth. It's super cold. It's four degrees, see? And yet there's a thriving ecosystem there. Where there's a will, you know, nature finds a way to live.
Sounds so cool. But now we're here at the Living Planet Symposium. How does that link? How does Earth observation and oceans belong together?
Well, when I started oceanography, several times, I joined a ship in the UK and went all the way down to South Georgia in the Southern Ocean. Now, that trip takes about 8 weeks on a ship. I was collecting measurements, actually. It was really great going through all the climatic zones, and every day is different. You know, some people say, oh, how can you cope with 8 weeks at sea? Isn't it all blue? Oh, no way. Every day is different. It's really, really nice. If you think then, I got off the ship and then I took a flight back. It took me 48 hours to get home. A satellite in a polar orbit does that same trip in just about 30 minutes, except it's covering a wide swath of ocean. And given the fact that the ocean is so big, like I said, 74% of our planet, if you include the ice, then the only way to really get a good grip on what's going on with the ocean is to view it from space. We'd need so many ships and hundreds of aircraft to try to cover things that we cover in space in 104 minutes. That's the time it takes to go around the world in a polar orbit. So if we want access to understand how our ocean works, where are the big swells coming from? You know, where are the storms out in the Northeast Atlantic? For two reasons. The weather forecasters, you know, when you want to go to work, you want a good weather forecast. They need to have good understanding of where the storms are, what the ocean is doing, what's its temperature. The surfers, they want to know when the waves are coming from those storms. And we can do both of those from space. We can monitor the waves with altimetry, and we can monitor the storms with thermal and visible imagery. Remote sensing gives us a unique perspective. It's a global perspective. It's a regular repeat coverage perspective. So we're going back to the same times every few days. And that's really powerful. I think that's what we can do in the sort of the real time sort of sense, the near real time sense. If you then think about what it means to actually monitor the oceans, we're collecting evidence of changes in our climate. And that evidence base is useful today and will be useful in the future as the climate crisis deepens, because it's the evidence base that decision makers need to make sound decisions on what to do for our future. Sea level is rising. It's rising and the rise is accelerating. If you take the last decade of sea level rise, over 4 millimeters per year. Now, if the sea level rises by 1 centimeter, there's a huge number of people that have to be displaced. By the end of 2100, we may have 2 meters of sea level rise, right? So this is big business. What are our governments going to do for us? How are they going to protect the shore? Or how are they going to manage a retreat from the shore? How are they going to make sure that we're resilient and we can mitigate the expected impacts of climate change? So Earth observation gives the evidence base to make sound decisions. And that is really core business for us. And of course, it's super fascinating. I mean, every time you open a new image in the ocean, you see something new. And that's just beautiful. As a scientist, that's exactly what you want. You know, the curiosity of, wow, look at that. What is it? Why is it like that?
So you say that the data helps to inform decisions. Does it also contribute to make predictions and forecasting? If you see how a pattern evolves, that you also look at how it could evolve in the future?
Sure. In Europe, the Copernicus program, led by the European Commission with ESA and also with the involvement of EUMETSAT, there is a very large service called the Copernicus Marine Service. And this service is bringing to the forefront ocean forecasting. And it's using as much satellite data as well as the in-situ observation from floats in the water column that are rising up and down, quasi-autonomous floats. And all of that data constrains the model. And it also allows the model to innovate and move forward, so that it can make a prediction. And then the next time we get more observations from space, we can nudge the model back onto target. So when the model is underestimated or overestimated, the technique of data assimilation helps to put the model back on target. So yes, indeed, ocean forecasting for the maritime industry, for our weather forecasts, also for the fisheries industry, and you know, pretty much anybody who's working and living on or close to the sea is really, really important. And there's a huge service industry out there, of course.
Okay, here's a final question. Where do you see Earth observation going in the next couple of years? How do you think it will continue?
Well, in Europe, at the European Space Agency, we started a long time ago. Our first major investments in Earth observation came in the ERS-1 satellite in the early 1990s. And we've grown more and more and more since then. And we've used different techniques, so visible techniques, thermal infrared, microwave radiometry, radar altimeters, radar images. And we've grown in expertise and capability, and also our ground segments have grown in a way that really make a difference. So all of our data are free and open to anybody, and you can all go and have a look and pick up very simple programs that allow you to open the imagery and browse yourselves. The future is about stabilization of backbone operational core within Copernicus. We need to make sure that we can maintain the observations we have today, because there's a big economy that's been built around the delivery of Earth observation for the ocean forecasting systems, for decision makers, for everybody who's using this data. But it's not enough. That needs to be sustained, but also we need to innovate. And in the Copernicus program, we have what we call the expansion missions, which are six new satellite missions that cover new aspects that have not been within the framework of operations before. So we're looking at a focus on the Arctic because of the dramatic Arctic change there, using L-band radars as well as C-band radars, next generation microwave radiometers that have a huge antenna of 8 meters in diameter, which rotates. And it's gold. It's absolutely beautiful. We're also focusing a little bit more on making sure we have more access to detailed measurements for biology in the ocean and also to monitor the land and what we call hyperspectral domains. So many, many fine measurements that when used together, you can pull out a whole series of different biological and geophysical parameters. So our work's made up. I'm busy for the rest of my life on some of the most beautiful engineering and science projects that are available to any of us on our planet Earth today. So it's just such a super exciting time to be involved in Earth observation.
Thank you so much for sharing this excitement with me. It was really nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Super great. I hope you enjoy the rest of the day. I'm having a ball.
This was the end of our episode, but please don't forget to check out our full program of Space Cafe Radio, where we offer interviews, insights, and editorial comments on the space sector. Thank you all very much for listening. And with that, I leave you for today. And don't forget, become a space watcher. Bye!